Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the second day of our December ASAP meeting. Good afternoon, Saul. It is 5 o'clock in the afternoon with you.
Okay.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. We're going to get a presentation now from the Korean Accounting Standards Board on the equity method of accounting. And I believe it's Yongsoo Han who is going to speak to us, right?
That's right. That
okay.
is right.
I give you the floor, Yongsoo.
All right. Okay, thank you. I'm Yongsoo Han. I'm a board member of CASPI, and also I'm a professor of Ewha Women's University. First of all, I want to say thank you for giving me a chance to present our research report on the equity method. If you look at the next page, you can see the contents of my presentation. There are 5 parts, and the major parts are number 2 and number 3. So in number 2, I'm going to propose some new concepts of the equity method. And in number 3, I'm going to give you some issues the ISB has to consider based on the Korean's experience in revising the IAS 28, the equity method. So let's go to page number 1, the next page. On page number 1, you can see the background of our research. Here, as we all know, there has been a lot of confusion around the current IAS 28 investment in associates and joint ventures. And for that conversion, many people says that IAS 28 has a problem. More specifically, they said that IAS 28 does not provide specific guidance in numerous cases, and that even when the guidance is given, it is often vaguely stated. So that is what the people usually says in criticizing the current IAS 28. But we think that is not the real problem. By real problem, what we meant is that providing more guidance could not be an answer. And good examples are just presented on page 1 of the slide. Here you can see 2 EDs that has been published in 2012 by the IASB. These 2 EDs were published because they want to provide more guidance on the equity method. But as soon as these EDs are published, these EDs were criticized by inconsistencies with the standard. By inconsistencies with the standard, what I meant is that these 2 EDs are consistent with some parts of the equity method, IAS 28. But for some other parts of the IAS 28, these 2 EDs are not consistent. And more understanding can be done in the next page. Would you please look at page 2 of my handout? You can see the AFERG's report, the short discussion paper that has been published in February 2014. In that paper, AFERG pointed out that the current IAS 28 does not clearly present the concept of the equity method. Instead, what they argued was that the current IAS 28 is a mixture of 2 concepts of the equity method. The first one is a consolidation, and the other one is a measurement. And again, good examples is presented at the lower part of that slide. There are 2 examples. The first one is about the transactions between an investor and equity accounting investee. And the other one is the losses. Is the losses of the equity accounting investees in excess of their carrying value. And what is interesting is that current IAS 28 is based on, is supporting one-line consolidation, for example, one. But IAS 28 also supports measurement basis, for example, 2. So, these 2 examples clearly states that current IAS 28 is having 2 concepts mixed together. One is a one-line consolidation, and the other one is measurement. So that even if we develop a new standard or new rule or new guidance, that will be consistent with only one side of the concept, either one-line consolidation or the measurement, and will be inconsistent with the other side of the concept. So, and that problem, I think, is going to grow bigger in the future. So if you look at page 3, you can see why I think the problem of the current IAS 28 is going to grow bigger in the future. If you look at page 3, you can see the amendments to IAS 27, the sector financial statement that has been published in 2014 August. In that amendment, IASB allows the usage of the equity method in the separate financial statement. And that will grow the problem bigger, because I think that, not just me, but many people think that that implies the extended usage of the equity method. So what I meant by the extended usage of the equity method is described in the middle of that you know, slide. The equity method was limited only to the associates in the consolidated financial statements in the past. But in the future, when this amendment has become effective, you know, the equity method will be extended not only to the associate, but also to subsidiaries, and also the equity method will be applied not only to the consolidated financial statements, but also the separate financial statements. So that the importance of the equity method is gonna grow bigger, and the problem is gonna grow bigger with the extended usage of the equity method. So that is the major purpose of our research report. So would you please look at page 4? So if you look at page 4, you can see the first objective of the report. And the first objective of the report, and also the major part of our research report, is about developing internally consistent equity method. By this one, what I meant is this one. You know, I just explained that current IAS has two concepts mixed together. So in the future, if you want to develop, you know, one internal, at least internally consistent equity method, we have two options. The first option is to take just one concept and discard the other concept. For example, we can say the equity method is basically a measurement, and we can eliminate all the parts related with the one-line consolidation. Or we can say equity method is basically one-line consolidation and eliminates all the standards, all the guidance related with the measurement. That's one option. But that option, the first option, is not realistic. That is my personal opinion. You know, if we say, for example, equity method is one-line consolidation, there will be countless, endless debates among people. Many people will say support that, or many people support the other concepts also. So that in this report, we did not take the first option. Instead, we take the second option. The other option is to develop a new dimension or new concept, so that we can combine the two traditional concepts together, the one-line consolidation measurement concepts together. So if we can successfully develop a third concept or third dimension, they can combine the measurement and consolidation together. Then maybe we don't have to debate about whether the equity method is a measurement or the one-line consolidation. So that is the first objective of this report that I will present in a minute. But you know, even after we decide or we agree what is the concept of the equity method, we still have the second problem, which is that we have to provide more guidance, more specific guidance about the equity method. So that second, the issue that we have to think about is, after we decide or agree with what is the concept of the equity method, we have to think about what additional guidance would be needed for making or improving the equity method better. So for that, you know, we put the second part of our report. So that on this slide, on page 4, you can see the second objective of the report. And the second part, what we did was to present some additional issues that the IASB should consider when carrying out the equity method research projects. And I think that Korea can contribute that a lot, because Korea has extensive experience of applying the equity method in a standalone or separate financial statements ever since 1998. So that, you know, I'm gonna give you two major parts of a report. And in the next page, page 5, you can see our first part of our research paper. In page 5, in our upper part, the first bullet point is already explained. You know, due to underlying concepts of the equity methods are seemingly unrelated concepts, so that if we take just one concept over the other, there will be countless, you know, debates onto that. So that what we try to do is to develop a kind of new concept that combines both the measurement and consolidation concepts together. And our results of the research is at the second bullet point. In the second bullet point, you can see it's a new dimension that we proposed, and we call that scope of equity accounted group. And here, equity accounted group is defined by the single economic entity consisting of investors and any associates, or equity accounted group can be defined by a set of entities which is treated as a single economic entity in investors' financial statement by means of equity method. So if I mean to express it simply, then what we meant by the equity account group is a group of entities or a group of companies where we can apply the equity method. So that would be an easier, the concept of the equity account group. Anyhow, based on that concept of equity account group, we develop a new dimension, so-called scope of equity account group. And this actually means the scope of equity account group means the extent of the inclusion of the associates in the equity account. Maybe if you look at the next page, page 6, you can have better ideas about what we meant by the, you know, the scope of the equity account group. On page 6, you can see three pairs, or three alternatives, graphical presentation of three alternatives, depending upon the scope of the equity account group. And in this example, in this graphical presentation, what we assumed was that the, you know, the investor share of the associate is 20%. So that please have 20% in your mind. And if you look at the three, you know, pictures or the graphical presentation of three alternatives, you can see, you know, some differences about the scope of equity accounted group. So for example, alternative one, scope of accounted group or the equity accounted group includes both the investor and 100% of associates, so that we think that 100% of the associates are also part of the equity accounted group. On the other hand, if you look at alternative two, you can see that investor and only the share of the associates or the ownership of the associates are part of the equity accounted group. And if you look at alternative three, the associates are all eliminated, so that of the equity account group includes all the investors. That determines the nature of the investment also. So that the alternative one regards the investment as a business, the investment to the associate as an investment to the associate. And alternative two assumes that the investment is an investment to the part of the business. And alternative three doesn't think the investment to the associate is a part of the business or the business. Instead, alternative three assumes that investment to the associate is a simply an investment to the financial assets. So that based on that, you know, apply our the three alternatives to some real examples. So would you please look at page 7? If you look at page 7, you can see the first application that we made. And this application is on the transactions with the associates. So let me read the example for a minute. An investor holding a 20% of associate sells inventory to the associate for a cash of CU 1000. The carrying amount of inventory was CU 500 in the investor's financial statement, and the associate holds the inventory at the end of the reporting period. So that this is unrealized income transaction, as we all know. And if we apply to the three alternatives, the results are presented on the slide. If you look at alternative one, you can see that whole transaction, the impact of the whole transaction has been eliminated, because we think that we assume that, you know, associates, 100% of them are the part of the equity accounted group. But alternative eliminates only 20% of the effect of the transaction, because we think only the investor share is included in the equity accounted group. However, alternative three does not eliminate any transaction, any transactions at all, because we think the, you know, the in alternative three, the, you know, the associate is not part of the equity accounted group. So that's one the application. If you look at page 8, next page, you can see the next application. The next application is the application to the transaction of recognition of changes in other capital transactions of the associate. So let me just read the example for a minute. An investor holds 20% of the associate. The associate receives non-reciprocal capital contribution of CU 1000 from its shareholder X in the current period. The associate accounts for this transaction as a capital transaction. The investor's ownership interest after the capital transaction remains the same at 20%. So, you know, in this example, the, you know, capital has been, I mean, by by the capital transaction of the associates, the investment has been increased. So that in all three alternatives, alternative one, two, and three, the left side account, I mean debit account, are all the same. Equity account investment is increased by 200 CU. However, if you look at the credit size, the counter account, you can see a different account in all different alternatives. In alternative one, the shareholder X is an owner of the X account because, you know, in the prior slide, you know, I showed you that, you know, in alternative one, 100% of the associates are part of the equity accounted group, so that the shareholder X is also is regarded as an owner of the equity accounted group, so that the counter account, the credit account, becomes an equity account. On the other hand, if you look at alternative two, the counter account or the credit account is a profit. In alternative two, what we assumed was that the associates, not 100% of the associates, but only our ownership is the part of the equity accounting group. The shareholder X is not regarded as an owner of the equity accounting group. So that is a third party. So this transaction becomes a transaction with the third party, not with the owners. So that the counter account or the credit account becomes a profit. And third one, the alternative three, is very interesting also. In alternative three, what we assume is that, you know, investment to the associate is not any investment to the business, but only the investment to the financial assets. So if it's an investment to the financial assets, you know, the counter account, I mean the debit, I mean credit account's name is depending upon how the investment to the associate is categorized. So for example, investment to the associate is categorized to the FVTLP, the fair value through profit and loss. The credit account name is going to be some kind of profit. However, if the investment to the associate is categorized to available for sale financial instrument, then it's going to be the counter account, I mean credit account name, is going to be other comprehensive income. So that's how all these three, you know, alternative concepts are different depending upon how we define the scope of the equity accounting group. So if you look at page 9, you can see some table. In page 9, you can see, you know, what, you know, on what transactions we apply the three alternatives. Actually, we applied not just two, but all 10 typical transactions related to the equity method. So you can see all the results of it in our report. But, you know, in our presentation, because of the shortness of time, I just give you two examples of that. But before going to the next slide, I just want to summarize one thing, or you know, want to point out or stress one thing very, very important in our report. You know, when you listen to my presentation, many of you might think that alternative two is very similar to the current IAS 28 or current equity method. But I should say that our proposal is not exactly the same as the current the equity method. Current equity method is a result of the mixture of two concepts, one-line concentration or measure. But our proposal is not like that. Our proposal is not developed based on either the online cost of zero measurement. Our proposal has been by a new dimension, so-called scope of equity. So that our proposal does not have any internally consistent concept. It is inconsistent, I mean internally consistent, and also our dimension of scope of the equity account group, is a kind of a concept or a approach that combines both the one-line consolidation and measure. So for example, alternative one is very similar to, you know, consolidation, and alternative three in our proposal is very similar to measurement, but we were able to incorporate all the one-line consolidation and measurement in one dimension that we call a scope of the equity, you know, the accounting group. So that's about the first part of a report. If you look at the second part, I mean next page, page 10 of my slide, you can see the second part of our report. Second part is about the issues that the ISB has to consider based on Korea's experience. And what you can see on that slide is the history of the equity method under the K-gap, under Korea, I mean in Korea. And if you see that, I mean, if you look at the upper part of it, you can see period one. And period one is before 1998. And at that time, our equity method is very similar to current IAS 28. We apply the equity method only to the associates and the consolidated financial statements. But, you know, in period two, we expand the application of the equity method to both the associates and the you know, subsidiaries, and also to the separate and consolidated financial statements. But our problem was on period two. As soon as we decided to apply the equity method to the subsidiaries as well as the separate financial statements, we encountered so many practical problems. So that, you know, we received so many questions from, and since the questions and the interpretation has been increased, accumulates so much, so that in 2004, if you look at the second line of the third box, you can see that in 1999, we issued an interpretation number 4259, which includes all the prior interpretations together. But even after that, we received at least 83 more interpretations, I mean, the questions, so that we were able, we had to issue the 83 interpretations after that. So in 2004, what we decided was to issue a new standard about the equity method that incorporates all more than hundreds of interpretations. Then in our experience, we can see two things, I think. The first one is that, you know, application of the equity method is not that simple at all. So that in order to represent the economic substance of the companies, you know, the equity method should be more sophisticated. That is the first point. And the second point is that the last box, the lowest box of that slide, page 10, which is the introduction of the equity method for subsidiaries. In other words, in Korea, we used to have two equity methods. The first one was the equity method for subsidiaries, and the other one is the equity method for associates. So let me explain to you why we had to have the equity method for subsidiaries under the KGAAP. So would you please look at page 11? And there you can see the reason for the equity method for subsidiaries. See, you know, we think that subsidiaries will not be the same as associates. Subsidiaries are part of the group. So that, you know, the equity method must produce the same effect as consolidation, at least for subsidiaries. But what we experienced was not like that. You know, what we experienced was that there were many instances where the consolidated financial statements and the standalone financial statement were not consistent with each other. So that in 2014, what we decided was to separate the equity method for subsidiaries from the equity method for the associates. So that what we decided in 2014 was to align the net profit or loss and net assets of the parent standalone financial statements with the parent share of the net profit or loss and the net assets in the consolidated financial statement, with only one exception. But that work is not easy. If you look at the next page, page 12, you can see some specific guidelines that we produced for the equity method for the subsidiaries. In order to align the results of the equity method for the subsidiaries the same as that of the consolidated, we made many extra rules. And what you see in this table is just some of the major differences or major, you know, the rules for the equity method for the subsidiaries. So that's the first one. If you look at the next page, page 13, you can see the sophisticated equity method for the associates under the KGAAP. The reason for that is clear. You know, in Korea at least, the impact of the equity method is great. I mean, it's very big on the financial statements. So that, you know, what we thought was that simple equity method cannot deal with or to capture the economic substance of the variety of transactions related with the equity method. So that, you know, we developed many sophisticated rules associated with the equity method. And what you can see is just a few examples of the equity method that we developed. But since you may not have enough ideas about what and why we have need to have the sophisticated equity method, I give you one example on page 14. So if you look at the next page, page 14, I give you one example. So let me give you, just read the example of it. The company A acquired company B as an associate by obtaining 30% of company B's shares at the beginning of 2001. In 2001, company B reported profit of CU200 and other comprehensive income of CU200. In 2002, company A decided that it should recognize an impairment loss of CU60 for company B. So in other words, the key point in this example is 2002. In year 2002, company B experienced an impairment loss, then how is it going to be accounted for in KGAAP and IAS 28? And the result is presented in this slide. KGAAP recognized the allowed the recycling of the OCI. So what you can see in the journal entry is that OCI of the associate is reversed. But IAS 28 does not allow the recycling of OCI, so that what you can see is that no OCI is appeared in the journal entry. And the result, I think, is severe. As I wrote down at the last bullet point, under IAS 28, the investor share of the associate's OCI is not reversed, then even when the investor recognizes the impairment loss up to the total book value of the associate, the share of the accumulated other comprehensive income is still presented on the investor statement of financial position. So again, this kind of lack of guidance can create some financial statement that does not present the real economic substance of the companies. So that is why we, propose some examples of the sophisticated accounting that is needed for the equity method. So that is the second part, major part of our report. And as I keep saying, if you look at our report, you can see more examples about it. And also Korea has more experience on that than what we wrote in the report. So that if you need any help, I think we can give you a lot of information about that. So that is about my report, and in the next page you can see the comment letters. After we released the report on last June, we got some comment letters from other constituents, and this is just a one-page summary of it. So if you look at page 15, the first bullet point is the agreement for the all common opinion of the comment letters. All the constituents agree that the revising or revision of IAS 28 is urgent. So that all constituents agree that the conceptual basis for the equity method is unclear, which creates difficulty in the practice, and that it is urgent to clarify the conceptual basis and revise IAS 28. And also, we asked them about what they think about our new proposal about the concepts or the dimension of the equity method, and the results are summarized in the second bullet point. Three constituents support our approach. They are the European Financial Reporting Advisory Group, New Zealand Accounting Standards Board, and Mexican Financial Reporting Standards Board. But two other constituents view the equity method a little bit differently from us. They say they think that the equity method is basically a measurement basis, and those two constituents are South African Financial Reporting Standards Committee and Australian Accounting Standards Board. I think that is all my presentation about my research report. And the next two pages are about the questions to the ASA. So that I just wonder what one do. Do you want me to ask you the question? Or do you want me to wait for the ASBJ presentation and ask you the questions?
Yongsu, thank you very much for this very clear and extensive introduction to your paper and your very good work that the Korean board has been doing. We're very grateful for that. What I would propose is that we ask the ASBJ to do their presentation, and then we open up the floor for questions and discussion.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for providing the opportunity to present the feedback to the survey on equity method of accounting. And in the interest of time, I think we should keep the my explanation very brief. So let me explain very briefly. As you see in page 2, we conducted the survey based on the recognition that ISB initiated the research project on equity method of accounting, and our objective is to gain the basic thinking about what is the view from users, preparers, and auditors with regard to the the equity method of accounting. So we did not question very detailed. Rather, we focused the very basic questions in our survey. And particularly, we asked the three questions, as you see in paragraph 2. One is whether information resulted from the application of the equity method of accounting is found to be useful. Second, whether the scope of equity method of accounting under the existing accounting standards is considered to be appropriate. Thirdly, what methods are found to be major implementation challenges when complying with accounting requirements relevant to the equity method of accounting. And we have had we have received 28 responses despite the very short comment period. And so, and let me explain the summary of responses. Well, generally, as you see in from paragraph 5 to paragraph 9 or 8, the users, preparers, and auditors appreciated the value of the equity method of accounting. And in other words, the stakeholders generally are happy with the use of the equity method of accounting. The reason is, maybe I can pick up some reasons. The first, the measurement at fair value P&L is not relevant, many users said. The other reason, as you see in page 4, the dividend income is coming right. So therefore, it's not the cost, just following the cost-based method of accounting isn't providing the useful information. These are the kind of the very the prevalent responses. And I'll go move on to the scoping question. Nevertheless, we have received some concerns about the use of the equity method of accounting. As you see in paragraph 9, some preparers said that the nature of the investment in associate is very similar to the investment in other equity interest. They're thinking about the similarity of the associate and other investment in other strategic investments. So let me move on to the scope question. As you see in paragraph 10 and to paragraph 13 or 12. And as for the scoping questions, I think the one thing I'd like to highlight is that it is stated in paragraph at the top of the page 7. Many preparers said that there are some circumstances where the equity method of accounting isn't providing the useful information. For example, when the dividend policy of an associate is controlled by another entity. Other cases where the group intends to sell of its investment in associate in near future. Thirdly, an associate is a listed company. These are the situations where preparers in particular think the use of accounting is to use of equity method of accounting couldn't necessarily be useful, providing useful information. And so let me move on to the third area, which is the major implementation challenges. And we have had received a number of areas that people believe are the area of with the implementation challenges. For example, a user said that it's not really clear the relationship between the profit or loss number resulting from equity method of accounting with the cash flow number. And this is one of the challenges users have identified. The other areas that preparers identified is, as you see in page 8, there are three areas. One is the availability of data. Some preparers said that it is significantly challenging to obtain the information that is relevant to the equity method of accounting in a timely manner. This is the first area. Area of implementation challenges. The other thing is that unification of reporting period. I think it might be this issue might be relevant to the specific regions, including Japan. This is because in Japanese case, physical reporting period is ending, generally ends March rather than December, and therefore it's very difficult to unify the reporting period. And thirdly, unification of accounting policies. Some preparers said that it is significantly challenging to unify accounting policies among the investor and associate, even that investor has only a significant influence over the associate. Lastly, I want to highlight a couple of the other comments. As you see in page 9, the people said that notion of significant influence isn't really clear under the accounting requirement. As for the other comment, impairment testing for investment in associate, in accounting requirement under the equity method of accounting, the unit of account is not the investment itself as a whole, rather the component of investment. However, as for the impairment testing of the investment in associate, unit of account is set at the investment as a whole. So there is some people say that there is some conceptual differences or conceptual challenges as to the unit of account. So these are the general feedback we have received for our survey. So thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Thank you. Alan, would you just like to briefly say where we're up to?
Or Michelle probably. Project.
Okay, so the project arose out of the 2011 agenda consultation, and we did a scoping document that we took to the board, I think in March, and we brought here in June. And the view that we got from both ASAF members and the board was that we shouldn't over-engineer this project, and we should look at the application difficulties. On that note, in November we took a paper to our Global Preparers Forum, where they stressed the practical difficulties in the application of the equity method. And I think we received very clear signals from GPF members that there was a step change in the nature of the relationship where they controlled an entity or where they had joint control or significant influence, and that one of the key issues for them was application and the elimination entries, because they would always have the ability to get the information to do the elimination entries. So they were very much looking for a simplification of the method, and that's where we are. I'm not sure where Korea's gone to be.
They look like they've come to London. Quick shift.
It's a bit sunnier for them than it was yesterday.
We might. Alan's gone to check it, so we might just be good if the Koreans continue to be involved.
It's okay. They're still there. It's just the voice activated system, which means that visually we see whoever's talking.
Okay.
You're looking a bit vacant. So if Korea there, I would suggest that we turn to slide 16 of the Korean presentation and go through the first question. I don't know if people have any comments.
It would be good if we could get as many people commenting on this as possible.
Because this is in a very early stage. I mean, I think Alan and I have been thinking over the summer that the equity method is a bit of a solution looking for a problem, and we've been working on problem definition.
Yeah, well, at least three areas. There's the scope and who should actually apply the equity method or which investments. There's the issue of significant influence, which is not that principled the way it's actually described in there. And people have said, when we developed the control model, we had a more principled approach, and people said, well, we should do the same for that. And then there's the actual method itself in terms of how you apply it. And so that's how you would apply it in the case of a controlled investment, so like a subsidiary, or how you'd apply it in a non-controlled investment. And so those are the three general areas. And I think my sense is there's more immediate need is actually in the third category, which is actually the application of the method, rather than should we broaden the scope, narrow the scope, the significant influence thing, how important is it? So I guess our immediate work is probably more on the how you characterise it. And so I think the questions that the I've got on slide 16 are important, and I'm particularly interested in hearing as well from those who are in the room who replied in terms of this considering the scope of equity versus the measurement, whether you think I'm not always clear whether the responses indicate that this is what you think it is today or this is what you think it ought to be, because we have these debates about whether is it a one-line consolidation or is it measurement, which I actually think is not actually that helpful as a debate, because I think it's quite clear it's a one-line consolidation, and then we came along with IFRS 3 and IFRS 10 and put more emphasis on control and created a conflict between those, so we end up with a bit of both. And the question is, what should it be? This is ultimately the question. So I'm interested in feedback, and I think from here, whether the approaches suggested in the Korean paper are worth pursuing, or whether we should think of it as a measurement basis, and so on.
Just before we ask the question, can we double check that Korea really is there? Can you hear us over there?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
Oh. Okay. No, back on.
It's voice activated.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're up for the questions.
All right. Tomo.
Yeah. We agree with the Alan's comment that the concept of the online consolidation and measurement is not a mutually exclusive concept. Rather, it can coexist in this broad context, and especially the equity method of accounting is a measurement from the viewpoint of reporting the financial performance rather than financial condition. So, I think we think that this is a measurement, and particularly from the viewpoint of the financial performance.
Constance?
It's been early discussion in the forum of tenant status, so there is no definite answer of any kind. I would also like to outline that it is the FRAC staff that provided comments to the Korean Standards Board in their paper. And I would also want to reiterate and commend the Korean Standards Board for their study, because they have pursued a significant effort help solving an issue that we had identified and not done more than identifying. So in the discussions that we have had in the form of standard status, what has clearly arisen is support for indeed clarifying the equity method, and certainly not getting into any fundamental review. That was just confirmation of what we had heard before, but they insisted that we should repeat that. And so when looking at the proposals brought by the Korean Standards Board, there was mixed views. And those mixed views were articulated around what is called in the paper approach 2 and approach 3, so whether it should be a purely measurement basis or whether elimination should remain. And in the discussion, the idea of that indeed you have, and that also present in the results of the survey of the SBG, that there might be differences to make between those associates or joint ventures in which you invest as part of your core activities might have to be distinguished from those that where you have more of a financial investment type. And that might be a possibility to distinguish whether you would want to have eliminations or not. Because basically the profit earned from your core activities would only would not yet be there. Some others took the view that if you were keeping elimination, it was more to make sure that you were not reporting profit in transactions that might not be totally on arm's length basis because of the relationship. and thought that maybe you could keep eliminations only when you would not have that evidence, and maybe it's a combination, you could combine the two ideas because they're not exclusive of each other. On the idea that you would have an equity method different for subsidiaries when they're reported in the parent financial statements, the proposal that is made by the Co-Instances Board, in fact, was very much promoted in the consultation that we ran following the proposal to amend ISA 27. So I think we have identified in that due process of ours that there was support for having the equity method for subsidiaries designed as is indicated. And that's basically, that was on that basis that you would get the relief that was in fact justifying the reintroduction of the measurement. I think that's about it.
Thank you, Françoise. Ken Shaw?
First of all, I think our Korean colleagues has a very good job on this project. The research is very good. And equity method, actually in practice, a lot of issues come out and we need to explore further and need to do something. And the Korean paper, they actually focus the a new, you know, new vision on the scope of the group. I totally agree with that, because I think that the first step, maybe it's difficult to answer whether it's should be one line consolidation or measurement approach. I think from the start point, maybe we should focus on the entity concept. It's what kind of entity we would like to account for. What kind of entity we should be to clarify the boundary of the economic activities we should like financial statements should be reflected those economic activities. So I think from starting point, focus on the what kind of, yeah, maybe the name is different, maybe equity accounting group or any other entity concept, but from the start point, the entity concept as a starting point, I think should be encouraged. And the second is that the question is that how to clearly define the boundary or clearly define the entity which we would like to account for. It seemed to me that I'm puzzled, because when we introduce the group, I just checked the definition of group given by the IFRS 10, it is clearly defined that the group should be a parent and its subsidiary. So in this case, associate has been excluded from the group. So maybe not just the specific standard level, maybe at the conceptual framework level, we need to think about that what kind of, because we have a separate project on reporting entity. Actually, reporting entity based on the group which identified by the IFRS 10, similar, included just the parent and its subsidiary. So maybe at conceptual level, what kind of reporting entity we need to be clearly defined, whether the reporting entity should be expanded to the group including the parent and its subsidiaries and its associate or joint venture, not only just limited to the subsidiary. So I think maybe we should move forward at conceptual level, what kind of reporting entity. In some countries, they call accounting entity. We are trying to focus on this question, this issue. The third one is that we also puzzled about that, what kind of, which statement we are focused on. It's consolidated statement, or it's separate statement, or so-called stand-alone financial statement. Because in some cases, estimated, we refer estimated at separate statement. In some cases, actually, at the reporting entity level, so different vision or different statement we based on, actually, maybe we have different kind of thinking about what estimation should be. So I think it's a good start, but we need conceptually clearly, and then can we move on.
Okay, Changwu.
Thank you. And Thomas, on the usefulness of equity accounting information, have you ever asked that your people in Japan, they still prefer equity accounting information to fair value information, even when level one fair values are available?
Thank you for asking this question. Well, we didn't ask the particular question, but we have got the relevant answer, actually. And as you see in page, I think, especially in the second bullet, and some users say that yet it may be worthwhile to consider fair value measurement for investment in associates when associated listed entities or when investment in associated funds will be frequently sold. So users are generally happy with the great use of equity method of accounting, but some users, particularly in this case one user, said the use of fair value would be relevant in the case when investment in associate is a listed entity.
In this case, you know, there are China, IFRS, and Korea are just suggesting some kind of new concept, a kind of equity accounted group, so significance influence concept. That's a kind of special concept to be dealt with different from the some kind of general investment or consolidation. So if they're people, investors think just the fair value measurement is enough, rather than focusing on the different concept, significant influence economics. So it's very important to get a new model before making such a decision. We need to clarify which information is more important, whether we should develop some specific standard for explaining significant influence concept.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm asking, whether fair value the information is quite, maybe they think better than any equity accounting, then we don't need to.
One thing I'd just like to highlight is that this user said the fair value information may be relevant for an investment in listed and the investment in listed entity, they didn't say whether the fair value P&L or whether fair value OCI would be relevant. And as I said, we think that the equity method of accounting is the measurement based primarily in light of reporting financial performance. So, amongst the our members or internal discussion, at least we think that from the perspective of the measurement, in the light of reporting financial performance, equity method of accounting is found to be very useful. But in some cases, as for the purpose of reporting financial positions, the fair use of fair value could be relevant in some cases, even when the investor has a significant influence over investment or in associates.
Tom,
may I say something?
Yes,
about
please.
Yeah, okay. Actually I presented this our research report in many other the areas like the EEG meeting and other places, and they all asked me why don't we use fair value instead of the equity method. And I thought about whether there is the right answer or not. So let me say a few things about that question. The first one is that there are many research about in accounting profession, in academia, we call it the market value. But you know, we sometimes compare the fair value with the accurate method in terms of its explanation or the capability of explaining the stock price. And what we found is that fair value has a better explanatory power to explain the market value than the equity method. So that, you know, fair value is better in that sense. And also in our research, I didn't explain it in this presentation, but if you look at the last part of our research, what we did was to compare the equity method with the cost method, and its explanatory power in explaining the market value. And what we found was that, you know, equity method has a better explanatory power, so that, you know, if I order it, fair value might be the best, and equity method is the second, and the cost method would be the third. But you know, so that, you know, what I'm trying to say is that maybe fair value is the best, but is it all the answer of it? And I have some doubt about it. You know, fair value have many levels, like level one, level two, and level three. In level one category, fair value would be better than the equity method. But how about level two and level three? Is it better than the equity method? I have some doubt about it. And also, you know, if we apply the fair value only for the level one financial instrument and the equity method for level two and level three, you know, I just assume that. But if we apply some other method, or like the equity method for level two and level three financial statements, then that means that we are applying again a different concepts of equity method the same, maybe, you know, the investment. So that is another question that I have. And the other one is that, you know, the applying fair value instead of equity method means that our, you know, concept of the investment to some, you know, associates is assumed to be a measurement, not one line consolidation. So that without deciding whether the investment to the associate is a measurement or one line consolidation, I think we cannot just simply say that fair value is the best method for the investment to the associates. And finally, you know, I want to say that, you know, whether we apply the equity method or fair value should depending upon the purpose of the investment. If the purpose of the investment is just a pure investment, just to get some money by increasing the value of the stock market price, then maybe equity method would not be necessary at all. Fair value would be better. But what if the purpose of the investment to the associate is something else, like the strategic investment, like, for example, you know, steel companies investing onto the coal mines for strategic purposes, then I don't think fair value captures the economic substance of that transaction at all. So that it all depends upon, you know, many different issues. So that simply saying fair value is the best, I think is a kind of something that we have to think more. That's all.
Don?
I learned a lot from the report, both now and when I was in Korea recently, and I commend the Korean Accounting Standards Board for their deep insights into these issues. I also would like to point out to the Australian comment letter that's in that report, because I think it's very well thought out. And that particular comment letter says that we have a concept of control within our reporting model, a reporting entity, and when you have control, you do full consolidation, you don't do one-line consolidation. And when you don't have control, you should not be accounting for as if it's a consolidation. And I'm very comfortable with that analysis. And so I don't believe the equity method ought to be a one-line consolidation absent control, because I don't think that you have. You could absolutely have the equity method as a one-line consolidation when someone else has control, and that makes no sense to me whatsoever. And so I come to the conclusion that their approach three is the right way to think about it. It's not about control over another enterprise. It's a measurement method. But then we have a lot of questions to ask about what we're trying to achieve with the measurement approach if I do not have control. and eliminating intercompany transactions to absent control doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And it gets back to the conversation that Chung Wu was asking about. What are we trying to achieve relative to fair value in those settings? And I think a listed fair value price is probably going to be capture the economics of your involvement far better than any constructed calculation. And the equity method tends to be a constructed calculation if it's going to be a measurement approach. But it opens up the question when you don't have a level one fair value whether or not you ought to do a constructed calculation called the equity method or you ought to do a constructed calculation called level two or level three fair value, right? And which one might be better? Absent an objective for the equity method, it's hard to be able to evaluate which one's better because you certainly have an objective for level two and level three fair value. But that's how I would analyze it, and I think it ends up then helping you better answer the implementation questions. I don't think you can go to the implementation questions absent understanding what you're trying to achieve and why you're using the equity method absent control.
Roger.
Well, I'd also like to congratulate the Koreans for an excellent paper. And also, I thought the Japanese paper was very, very, very impressive.
True.
I'd agree with a lot of what had been said. I think if there is a listed associate, the best way of assessing the value of that associate is the market price. And in fact, not only will investors have that, they'll also have access to the extensive financial information that companies are producing separately. So as soon as you've decided that, you're effectively no longer in a single line consolidation. You're into a measurement method. Now the only problem with applying fair value then to other types of associates which are not listed is the reliability of the calculation. And so I understand why both users and preparers are nervous about the subjectivity and the scope for error in that. But I do agree with Tom that actually it's a construct, as is the equity method. The equity method can't really get you to some sort of fair value, though. I mean, what if you're making losses and it goes below zero? Can the fair value be below zero if you don't have a liability to pay the losses back? I think there are lots of problems about this that I'd only started thinking about after I read the Korean and the Japanese papers and listened to the discussion. So it does seem to me that we do need a fundamental rethink. I think what the advantage of these papers, well, one of the many advantages is it does show the contradictions that we do have at the moment. And actually, I was very interested that I think there were over 80 amendments or application guidance to the Korean standard. We do have more and more complications in IFRS coming out of this thing, and there's a recent limited scope amendment, which is only just been published, which is already causing difficulties in practice. So I do feel a fundamental rethink of the whole method will be appropriate.
Just for Tom and Roger, what about the point that was made about strategic investments? So, you know, if you've invested for a different reason, would you still go to fair value?
I think the problem is if you've already decided that, I'm a director of a company which has a strategic investment, but which is listed. So, you know, the analysts are just going to go to that value. Now, the strategic benefits should turn up in the profits eventually of the investing company, not just the investee. The value of the investee is the value of the investee. If you're getting synergies out of it, that will come up in both the profits of the investee and your profits, and you'll be able to see those profits and cash flows as they arise. So I'm not sure that a strategic investment is that different to another type.
So you wouldn't accept the argument that it might be worth more to you because of the strategic position than just the fair value?
Well, if it's worth more, that won't be the value of the affiliate. It'll be coming out in your own cash flows, and you'll be valuing the parent. So the value, to the extent the associate is getting a benefit of that alliance, that will come out in their cash flows and that will be in their value. But I don't think you should start associating with the investee value that you're actually deriving in your mainstream business.
And the question is whether the equity accounting number would actually give you a better number than the fair value anyway, because... Right. If it was actually
I wasn't advocating this, I was trying to push the point.
But if you take it through, that if you wanted to go down the strategic versus just ordinary investing line, then surely the disclosures are the things that actually become important, because it actually explains the relationship and how you're actually working together. It's not the number that you're going to put in your balance sheet.
I'd be willing to accept maybe that the fair value doesn't give you the whole picture, but I still have a hard time understanding why a constructed measure of proportion share of profits is any better portrayal of the outcome of a strategic investment than fair value.
Was this your point, Chris? Yeah. Liesl?
Briefly, we've heard that we shouldn't over-engineer, and we've heard in Brussels too that we shouldn't over-engineer or be too radical about things. However, absolutely with Tom and others, we have focused had at a starting point the investment. But then we talk a lot about do we eliminate things or how we show the effect, and we've shown effects in full consolidation without any investment because of control. We haven't really made the jump between fully consolidating without any investment, then how to present the investment and what we then show in the performance statement. Is it just the fair value change, and or do we put it in all sorts of lines or one line in the P&L? And I think the effects in the P&L should be more in the focus of what we do, because how to account for investments, we've got a limited toolbox of cost or fair value or whatever, but keeping really on the investment doesn't get us anywhere.
Alexander?
Well, I'm very pleased to read this report, because I believe the situation in Brazil is pretty much the same as in Korea. Since 1976, the company law requires the equity method for investment in investments that you have significant influence, which is the participation of 20% is one indication of that, but it's not the only one indication of that. And actually, in Brazil, the listed companies and company that pay dividends is the individual company, it's not the consolidated company. So when you look at the stock exchange, what you're going to be traded there is the individual share, is not a consolidated share. So we have a long time experience with the equity method so far. And I'm sorry, but I strongly disagree with the fair value is a better measure for variations in that case. So I like to compare with a financial instrument that you have a trading available for sale on a held to maturity investment. The information changes in fair value because of stock exchange fluctuations, because of the election, for example. That is of no use for a company that's investing in a long-term perspective of more than 20 years in another investee. That is a strategic investment. That's why we call it significant influence. That it requires to be a significant long-term position. If it is not designed to trade, if I not intend to trade, even the longest run, you can imagine. I don't see why fair value fluctuation based on the stock prices is irrelevant information. So I prefer to maintain comparability on historical costs on both sides of it, so the investor and the investee. So I recognize it based on historical costs, because my assets, even if I am a listed company, my assets too are not on a fair value basis. So why the fair value basis of my investee? So it's just another asset that I do not intend to sell. So it isn't different for me to evaluate PPE, which is interesting strategic investment that I have in another company. So
historic cost is, of course,
sorry?
For a long-term investment, historic cost is, after a couple of years, completely irrelevant.
Why? I said, no.
Long-term investment that are more irrelevant.
But you are updating it from the profits of the company. So no, it's not really not about. If historical cost is irrelevant, the whole financial statement is irrelevant.
Well,
because it's based on historical costs.
No,
that's agreed. it's agreed that financial statements are. So we have a long experience of that, and it works well. So people tend to appreciate that amount, and they normally eliminate proportionately. But I believe I agree with Tom in that sense that well, he did that. That's another story. But you can end up without eliminating if you do not consider it as a consolidated one-line consideration.
I, I would like to echo some of what has been said. I think when the idea comes to the table that the difference should be made between those associates and joint ventures that participate in the entity's core activities, I think in a way it indicates that the market participant view and the value that might be most relevant in case you want to sell your investment is probably not the one that is would provide more relevant information. And in fact, the idea of carrying those investments as part of your core activities are more of an in-use type of investment than otherwise. In terms of we want investors to rely on disclosures, there should be everything they need and no more. If you bring in the statements measurements which are not consistent necessarily with the way the cash flow profile will turn out, and feel the need to provide disclosures to say, oh, you know, I put that value there, but it doesn't show you exactly what you should know, and I put in the disclosure what you should know. I mean, we make things complex. Then I'm sensitive to the view that the equity method is a construct, you have a difficulty to really describe what it represents, but we've seen also that it has been privileged over cost because basically your cash flows come through a dividend stream, and that maybe the share of the profit that is reported might be a good representation of that profile. So it's not maybe not intellectually satisfying, but if it is in practice effective, what are we looking for? Looking for great intellectual ideas or things that work in practice?
Chris?
Just a couple of things to summarise. Certainly agree with Tom and Roger's points. The other thing I think to bring out is that I definitely agree that it's a measurement approach when you're looking at an associate relationship. I think the thing we haven't actually explored here is the joint control issue, because I think there is a possibility there that you could end up with something different, and perhaps the equity method might be more appropriate for those types of relationships. I think there is some merit in really thinking about the actual types of relationships, which is a little bit, I think, where Korea was coming from. But I do find it problematic that we would be very happy under IFRS 9 to put in fair values for investments at lower than significant influence for both listed and unlisted entities, and then we somehow turn around for something that does have significant influence and say that valuation is actually different. Should be different. I just don't see how that actually fits with providing a cohesive whole for a set of financial statements.
Michelle?
Yeah, with regard to the fair value measurement, I just want to add one point. Conceptually, I think fair value measurement could provide relevant and useful information to the investors, especially if the associate listed companies there, because it's easy to get the number and information will be useful. But we have to think about the cost and have to think about the implementation difficulties. Especially, I'm not sure other countries, but in China, the companies could be listed very very small number, very small portion of the companies. So that means most of the associates are not listed. So it's if the accounting standard require them to fair value of those associated, I think it will be a very very big shock for the companies, maybe a disaster for them, because it's really difficult for them to reliably measure those investments in associate. So in this case, I'm not sure, you know, it's a right way to go. Yeah.
Clement?
Very quickly, I think echoing what Chen Chen said at the outset, if we are not preparing to to revise the reporting entity as a group definition, then I think if it's 10, actually deal with the control issue and the consolidation issue already. And if given that is the goalpost, I think surely, you know, the equity, what is left for equity accounting would be a measurement approach rather than a consolidation approach. And on that note, I think, you know, the fair value measurement should be considered, just like the FI, you know, that under IFRS 9.
Domo?
I just like to pick up the comment from Roger. And as Roger said, there may be the necessity of the fundamentals rethinking about the equity method of accounting. And having regard to the introduction of equity method accounting to the separate financial statement, I would see there could be a need for the fundamental rethinking about the equity method of accounting. There might be a fundamental difference between the equity method of accounting applied to subsidiary and that applied to associate. But, you know, as regard to the equity method of accounting to the associate, we really don't think that there should be a fundamental rethinking about the use of the equity method of accounting. Rather, we think there are several areas to consider in to improve the current application of the equity method of accounting, including the conceptual thinking as well as the practicals. And let me highlight a couple of things. Firstly, we are discussing the notion of profit and loss in the context of the conceptual framework, and as the equity method of accounting requires an investor to recognize a portion of the investee's profit through the profit or loss. There could be some merit of the discussing what is the nature of the profit or loss recognized by an investor in application of the equity method of accounting. And secondly, in what situation or cases would they prepare the procedures similar to those employed for the consolidation would be necessary in the case of the equity method of accounting as opposed to desirable? We think that in some of the procedures that apply to the equity method of accounting could be necessary, but other procedures could just be desirable. And so there should be some discussion about what is necessary and what should be desirable. And thirdly, we think that based on the feedback we have received, we think that the challenges we are facing is how we can alleviate the practical challenges about the application of the application of the equity method of accounting. I highlighted three areas that maybe including the obtaining necessary information in a timely manner, the unification of the accounting policies and unification of the financial reporting period. These are some of the significant challenges that preparers are facing. So we can think about how we can alleviate the practical challenges while ensuring the usefulness of the information. And lastly, maybe it's just my personal view, but as for the scoping of the equity method of accounting, especially for associate, we can think about that issue in two ways. One is that whether the use of the significant influence is based on the notion that the business nature of the business activities is consistent with the notion of significant influence, or whether the information that is available for investor is sufficient in order to have let me reflect in a way, whether the investor is supposed to have the information necessary to apply the equity method of accounting when there is a significant influence. So there are two different thinking. One is the consistency with the nature of the business activities. Second is the availability of the information. So this is just my personal view, but maybe an area for consideration.
Roger, and we, I don't want you to have to reschedule your trip again, so we need to come to conclusion.
Just a quickie, I'm aware of the practical difficulties of fair value, but it could even be that that share of book value as it grows could be a proxy for that, at least in smaller associates. That would actually give the same information as we have at the moment, but would actually at least relate it back to a measurement model. The other thing I wanted to say is that people are worried actually that about long-term investment. I think actually fair value might demonstrate better the success of a long-term investment in an associate over years than either historic cost or the current equity method of accounting, because in fact the value of that investment may be growing much faster than actually would be shown just by taking the original book cost and adding on the profits to date. So I don't see this as discouraging long-term investment, I see it the other way.
Okay, well, Yongsu, thank you very much for your excellent work and presentation. You saw we had a very lively discussion on the basis of your proposals. Also, thanks to the ASBJ for their very good work. So we will take it from here.
Yeah, I've done a quick summary. Okay. So I think there was a lot of you, so I'll just try to... I think what Anne and I are thinking is there'll have to be a short discussion paper. So some of the things I think I've heard we'll need to address are the nature of the investment, the strategic participation, whether there's a difference between associates and joint control. The use of fair value seems to be, it's particularly for listed entities, seems to be gaining some support, but we need to look at the performance reporting if we use fair values. The concepts of the group, whether we want to think about the concept of the group. I think Tom raised where we've got the concept of control, we've got to be driven down a measurement path. I think we'll need to think about that. And then I think there is important that we think about the equity method in separate financial statements and the equity method in consolidated financial statements and what it is we're trying to achieve in both of those. And I think the most important part is the challenge of conceptual thinking whilst being practical in our application.
And in terms of timing as well, I think if you look at all of these issues, there's some quite big challenges here, because you could we could take all of these on, but it would be a much longer project. And for example, you know, Chris's point is saying if you've got interest no matter what level, why can't we use the equity method? Why do we switch to fair value? If we use the equity method no matter what, we don't need a definition of significant influence, because we've just decided that it's non-controlled, therefore equity method. But then you might ask other questions, like if it's joint control or do you do have some sort of influence, does that mean you should have more information about that investment, for example, as we do with our joint venture stand? So these are some of the broad questions for us, is that I think right today we have a problem with the equity method, particularly with the number of requests that are coming in because of the conflict between IFRS 10 notional control and IAS 28. Can we do something relatively quickly that would help address that while we have the longer term? So that this is the sort of thing we might have to think about, some practical processes to address some of the issues that we're facing in the Interpretations Committee, while at the same time nurturing a longer-term project. So that's you know, you can see from the views coming across, it's not going to be the easiest thing.
Yosu, do you want to say something?
Yeah, may I say just one last comment? You know, I'm so happy to see that the equity method is discussed in the ASAP meeting, and also I was so happy to see so different opinions and so many different topics on the equity method also. Actually, the purpose of our report was not to give you some final answers about the equity method, but want to increase the attention about the equity method and make the people realize the problems and possible solutions of the equity method. And to my view, our research report was successful. And I also thank you very much for, you know, discussing about our research report and spending time on our report also. Thank you very much.
Yongsu, thank you. And now you understand why the ISB is such a happy bunch of people, because we are always confronted with very different opinions.
That's true.
Thank you very much.